Welcome to another episode of Mini Fellowship in Movement Disorders, where we take most challenging concepts in movement disorders and simplify them into easy-to-follow explanations. I'm your host, Danish Bahati, a movement disorder neurologist who loves to teach physicians online, especially in the developing countries. The case that you're submitting, the patient clearly has tremors that are more suggestive of resting tremor rather than the classical postural inaction tremor with the essential tremor. The biggest point to ponder or hint or clue is that her jaw tremor is classic tremor with a jaw open and kind of a chewing tremor with a jaw or mandible bites regularly or repetitively. A classic ET tremor in that area is either a lip tremor or a chin tremor without any open jaw. While she clearly has an open jaw, which is a sign of hypomania of Parkinson, and then a jaw tremor, which is more considered a resting tremor rather than the lip or chin tremor of essential tremors. Similarly, in her hand, as you have demonstrated in the video, she has a resting tremor of the hand that goes away when she raises her hands up, and then she does not have any reemergence of postural tremor, and then she has no action tremor throughout. In essential tremor, a postural tremor typically persists or may even get worse during action. So both of these features are strongly for resting tremors. She does have a stoop posture and some hypomania on the face, but I don't have the testing for bradykinesia in the video. And as you know, that the bradykinesia is the required feature of Parkinson. So everything else can be present, and if bradykinesia is not present, then you cannot consider it Parkinson's disease. And for that, you need finger tapping, hand opening, closing, pronation, supination, foot tapping, heel tapping. And then bradykinesia is a very classic definition. There is what is called true bradykinesia, and then there is false or pseudo bradykinesia, which is more of a psychomotor retardation or older age. But we'll talk about that in the Parkinson's module next. So now the challenge is that if the tremor physiology looks all like resting tremor, but there is no presence of bradykinesia, presumably, then the diagnosis on the classification is isolated resting tremor. Isolated resting tremor has a high conversion into Parkinson's, but it can take up to 2 years before it converts into Parkinson's. And then there is some literature on people who have isolated resting tremor, but never fully materialize into Parkinson's disease. Another important feature to remember is that her DAD scan is negative, but there is this category of patients which are called scans without evidence of dopaminergic deficit, so SWEDD, or SWEDs. So there is a big debate of Parkinson's patients who are SWEDs, that their scans don't have any evidence of dopaminergic deficit, but they are classically Parkinson's. And there is some limited data showing that these SWEDs actually do convert to a true dopaminergic deficit Parkinson's in the next 2-3 years. So there was a study from Italy, I think, that Alfonso Fasano did before he moved to Toronto, where he was doing annual DAD scans on his patients who were SWEDs, and he showed a conversion, I don't know, 20-30% per year, something like that, where the scan did become positive later on, but not on everybody for the 2-3 years that he repeated the scans for. So SWEDs are extremely uncommon and rare. I may have one patient where I'm for sure that it's a SWED, where he clinically is Parkinson's with bradykinesia in addition to the resting tremor and rigidity, but the scan is dopaminergic negative. And then there is another one which I am not sure, because the bradykinesia is hard to judge because of the severe tremor. Fortunately, that's not the case for her. So currently, DAD scan is not considered the diagnostic criteria. So if your clinical evidence of bradykinesia is present with resting tremor, then you should call it Parkinson's disease. And then you can say it's a SWED, that the scan is without evidence of dopaminergic deficit. And then the third complicating factor in this situation is that she is so tremor predominant. And I have many patients who have Parkinson's disease, which is very tremor predominant, and they typically don't have a very good response to levodopa. So in general, levodopa or Sinemet works really well for Parkinson's disease, tremors and bradykinesia, but there are few patients, which I will say in my practice at about 1%, so 1 in 100, and I have about 3,000 Parkinson's patients, so we have probably 30 or so patients who have what we call levodopa-resistant tremor. So we are very sure they're Parkinson's. They do respond to levodopa, and their response is typically improvement in bradykinesia and rigidity in walking and reduction of akinesia. So you know that it's working, and they can tell it's working because when they wear off or when they stop the medication, they get worse with their mobility, but their tremor just does not respond or responds very weakly. So that is a phenomena which is very common and very challenging. Now, I do not know if there are isolated resting tremor which are levodopa unresponsive, but it could be true. And as I said, I have one or two patients where I am confused if they do have Parkinson's or disease or isolated resting tremor, because they are levodopa resistant. And then lastly, in terms of levodopa resistance, typically we do not call it levodopa resistant until they have tried medication all the way up to 600 milligram daily, or two tablets of 25-100 milligram three times a day, and any dose used less than that, we will not consider it levodopa resistant tremor. Like I said, some patients have prominent tremors and they do not respond about the same amount to levodopa, or it may be that they do have a good improvement in bradykinesia quickly at low doses because the bradykinesia is minor to begin with, but their severe tremors require a much higher dose of levodopa. So let's say that this patient has tried levodopa to 600 milligram, and let's say that the bradykinesia is absent on examination or unequivocal, hard to say, and then the DAT scan is truly negative and not a misread by the nuclear medicine physician or radiologist, because they may not have seen enough of these DAT scans to make a reliable subjective diagnosis. Remember, most people who are reading DAT scans are reading them subjectively without quantifying that. There is a way to quantify it. It's called ROI, or region of interest. So you take an ROI of the basal ganglia, and then you take a ROI of the same size in occipital region of same side, and then you create a ratio of the two ROIs, and if the ratio is above certain number, then it is considered normal, and if it's below that, then it's considered abnormal. That's a slightly better way of reading the DAT scan than just looking at it, but most places, including our centers, often do not do that. And there are at least two scans in the last 5 years that we've been doing them where I do not agree with the read of the radiologist, and I tell the patient as that's what the radiologist read, and that's my reading on the DAT scan. That was a side note. I have nothing against your radiologists. I'm sure they're excellent. So let's say that's the situation. How do you treat? Like you pointed out, the patient can not try propranolol and primidone because of the comorbidities. You have tried gabapentin and you have now been trying Topamax. All of them are the appropriate first-line medications for essential tremors. So you've done well there. Now we need something unusual to try to control these tremors when the primary therapies have failed. So the medication options for me to trial will be trihexphenidyl next, Artane. It's very good in tremor control, but often causes cognitive impairment. So it's a 50-50% chance you can try it and see if patient tolerates it or not. If patient does tolerate it, then she can stay on it and is likely going to get benefit. If not, then you'll have to stop it. The other option to try, which is a weaker anticholinergic, is amantadine. Although in PD, GOCOVRI trial, the extended-release amantadine, there was no significant improvement of the tremor of the patients who were given GOCOVRI or amantadine. But I still think that there is some role of amantadine in tremor, but it is a biased subjective opinion. And then Cogentin is an anticholinergic, but I've never used it for tremor specifically, so I would probably not go to it. Then other unusual medication that have been used for tremors would include Zonegran or zonisamide, and Keppra or levetiracetam would be another option. I think zonisamide is similar to Topamax in terms of mechanism of action, and that's why it can work and have been tried. Keppra has been tried for everything in the world, including orthostatic tremor. And so it will be interesting to try it here. Gabapentin is a good thought, definitely, and a higher dose can be tried, but I have personally never had any good luck with gabapentin ever. Now, in terms of surgical therapies, DBSA is tricky on her. One, she is surgically not really safe for the battery implant because of the CHF and O2 issues. So that is challenging. However, she might be a safe candidate for a focus ultrasound. The challenge with focus ultrasound is that it's typically done unilaterally, because bilateral focus ultrasound have a very high risk of creating dysarthria, nearly 30% or more, which, you know, maybe which would likely be permanent. And then the focus ultrasound often causes balance problem early on that usually resolve, but there is still a chance, I think 5 to 10% of having some balance problems afterwards. I'm not very familiar with it. I've not followed that literature very closely. We don't do focus ultrasound in Nebraska Medicine, but the CHI in Omaha does focus ultrasound through their hospital down in Nebraska City, not in Omaha. And so we do send our patients. I have sent maybe 5 or 6 patients to get focus ultrasound from CHI. I have not seen a single one back yet. And then the pandemic came along. But I think focus ultrasound unilaterally for the dominant hand will be a very good option to consider. DBS, if tried, I would again consider only for it unilaterally. But the main challenge is not the lead placement, which is awake surgery. The main challenge will be the battery placement, which is the general anesthesia, and that would be the main risk for her with the DBS surgery. And then last point to note with the surgical therapies is that unilateral surgeries, either DBS or focus ultrasound, typically don't have much impact on central tremors. So if her jaw tremor is very bothersome to her and affects her speech, like a couple of patients I had, then focus ultrasound have maybe only 15% improvement with unilateral surgery. And DBS unilateral is about the same. If you do bilateral DBS, then the chances of improvement gets much higher, close to 50%, I believe, maybe 60, 65% for some of the central tremor, but still not as good as the hand tremor, of course, which is more than 95% chance of improvement. So that is something to keep in mind. I do have one patient who has a really severe jaw tremor, kind of like the jaw tremor she has, but much more severe. And after failing everything, I'm doing Botox injections on her jaw. So I do injections on temporalis and masseter, the jaw closing muscle, and it gives her mild weakness, but the tremors does get better a lot. And so enough that she keeps getting it, although she have trouble chewing her food afterwards and things like that. So another thing to consider as an option for the jaw tremor if that's bothersome to her. To learn more about the mini fellowship, visit our website for University of Nebraska Medical Center, Department of Neurological Sciences, where you can be part of the community and ask us questions. You can write to me on mdclinicforyou@gmail.com. It's mdclinic4u@gmail.com. And follow me on YouTube for longer discussions by searching for Danish Bahati, D-A-N-I-S-H space B-H-A-T-T-I. You can also find me on Twitter @DanishBahati_MD and on LinkedIn.